Hello, everyone. This will be our very first official episode for Hinterland Story Hour. Today we're talking about Altered Carbon, the TV show.
Season one.
Season one, specifically, because season two is different enough that it doesn't flow well. It's kind of, I imagine, although we didn't watch them one right after the other, I imagine if you did, it's kind of jarring. What do you think?
It is jarring because we didn't finish the first season because we let Netflix expire, and then we came back a year later, finished season one, and then started season two.
That's so right. It was jarring. Yeah,
it was very jarring.
We watched the finale for the first season and then went right into the next one, and it was weird.
I think if we have the time, we should go ahead and do season two.
Well, I don't have notes for season two.
No, that's true.
So, but season one has enough content for a whole... How long will this episode be? Shouldn't be very long. We are... if you've listened to our other podcast, you know it can be very unstructured. We're going to attempt to be structured with this particular one. Starting with content warnings. That's going to be our very first thing we'll say.
This is not a series to watch with your children, your parents, or your anyone else.
I wrote not for children or your own parents. You ever watch something awkward with your own parents?
Yep.
Don't do it. This show will be very awkward if you're watching it with your own parents. Just say no. Say no to that awkwardness in your life.
It's just, yeah.
It's bad form. Lots of violence and gore and somewhat gratuitous sexual scenes that we promptly skipped.
We should say, since we have mentioned the second season seems to have toned a lot of that down, including the violence to the point of being rather ridiculous.
Yeah, it was like superhero movie violence.
It's going to be impossible to do this without about the second season.
We'll mention it a bit, but we're just not going to dive into the story much.
We watched the first episode again just to refresh our memories last night. And right off the bat, it was, sex scene in the shower. Didn't really show anything. And then a bunch of blood and violence.
Yeah, like the very first few minutes of the show was that.
Yeah. It's just a dark, gritty show.
Yeah.
Which is not necessarily bad.
That's part of the reason I liked it.
Yeah, it's a very uncomfortable world to live in, clearly.
Yeah, it's supposed to be dark and gritty, and there's supposed to be a really heavy contrast between the lofty golden halls of the ultra mega rich that are portrayed in the show, as opposed to the disgusting drug fueled muck that everyone else lives in down below. You know, it's
the elite literally live in the clouds in this beautiful thing. Don't they call it the aerial or something, or the?
I can't remember. It's like a skyscraper.
Yeah, it's got air or something in the name.
Yeah.
But there's also this big, basically like sex club or sex dungeon or something called Head in the Clouds.
Yeah, and it's like a low flying satellite or something, isn't it? It floats. Yeah, it's on turbines.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, it's some sort of like upper atmosphere satellite. Anyway.
Well, maybe we should go ahead and describe the world because we already jumped into that.
Yeah. I mean, we could just read the synopsis straight up if you want. We can change things up. It's our first episode. Some things to iron out.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, we'll get our sequence of what we're going to talk about in order here. But yeah, let's just read the synopsis. It'll describe it perfectly.
I should say, in case someone didn't read the description, this is spoilers.
Oh, yeah. Well, that will be in...
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll mention that in our... anyway... Never mind. All our episodes will be just spoiler casts. So if you haven't watched something that is our podcasts are based on and you don't want to be spoiled, then you should probably watch or read or play, because we're doing video games and books and whatever, all those, before you listen to us, because we don't care about spoilers. Like, we're just going to spoil everything. We just enjoy the stories. So I'll just read what's right on Wikipedia real quick. It says, ooh, our chairs creak. It's terrible. says the series takes place over 360 years in the future, with most episodes the first season set in the year 2384. In a futuristic metropolis known as Bay City, in the future, a person's memories and consciousnesses are written onto a disc-shaped device called a cortical stack, which is implanted in the vertebrae at the back of the neck. These storage devices are of an alien design and have been reverse-engineered and mass-produced, but can only be made from the material on Harlan's world. Physical, human, or synthetic bodies are called sleeves, and stacks can be transferred to new bodies after death, but a person can still be killed if their stack is destroyed and there is no backup. While this means anyone can live forever, only the wealthiest, known as Meths, in reference to Methuselah, have the means to change bodies through clones and remote storage of their consciousness in satellites, so they never have to die of old age before being re-sleeved. Takeshi Kovacs is a political operative with mercenary skills, is the sole surviving soldier of the Envoys, a rebel group defeated in an uprising against the New World Order. In the first season, set 250 years after the Envoys are destroyed, his stack is pulled out of prison by 300-year-old Meth Lawrence Bancroft, one of the wealthiest men in the settled worlds. Bancroft offers him the chance to solve a murder, Bancroft's own, to get a new shot at life. In the second season, set 30 years later, Kovacs, now in a new sleeve, continues to search for his lost love and Envoy leader Kelchrist Falconer.
Probably could have left that last sentence off because it's not relevant.
But... yeah, we're not talking about the second season, but it was one sentence, so whatever. So that gives you a basic rundown of what's going on. What are you doing?
Shrinking that.
Oh, good call. Yeah, we can just we can go through the characters. Want to talk about characters?
Okay.
The main character, as we've already mentioned in the synopsis, he was an elite soldier for the Protectorate, right? Is that how it worked?
Yeah, he was. He had a troubled childhood, he and his sister. Sorry, that was my phone. An abusive father, and I get the feeling a mother who abandoned them.
Yeah, I don't think they talk about her mom at all. I don't recall.
At a certain point, the sister, who, spoiler, has been alive the whole time and has become very, very wealthy. She mentions the mother and how she abandoned them, I believe.
Gotcha.
But he gets rescued from that life as a child and
by this crazy soldier, elite soldier guy.
You're not crazy.
He's hardcore, I guess is what I meant.
Yeah.
He's like a hardcore soldier. What's his name? Jaeger, which is a great name for soldier.
Yeah. So he raises him. Basically, he becomes a surrogate father. And but then Takashi meets this Falconer, this really, really, we're supposed to think, charismatic woman who's a rebel leader. And I think she's supposed to be the one who invented stacks, isn't she?
Yeah, that's revealed in the second season. She's supposed to be the one who, she's like a scientist, but also an elite warrior, which is...
She became elite warrior after.
It's just...
Her character was always a bit too... In the first season, it was okay because she was like this mythical character in his past.
And Takeshi, his memory. Yeah, he believes she's dead, but he has flashbacks to her because he doesn't feel like he's been dead 250 years.
He's been in storage the whole time.
Right. And she was, to him, she was alive recently because he's, you know, there's no time gap for him, even though it's 250 years later. So he still thinks about her a lot. He has flashbacks, and she, like, appears as, like, memory apparitions to him.
Oh,
and...
so we need to back up, because we're starting to just off in the left field, because we know what we're talking about. So the story begins with Takashi coming out of storage in the body of, what is he, a Swedish actor? Joel Kinnaman?
Yeah, I think he's... Yeah, he's Swedish.
Yeah. Very... skilled actor. I think I've seen him in just a few things. You would not... Is he Swedish?
I believe so.
I'm really confused now because he
doesn't... Some Scandinavian...
He might not actually be from Scandinavia. You should look that up because...
I think he's Swedish. I'll take a look.
Yeah, I've seen interviews with him and he does not have an accent of any sort. So I might be wrong in thinking that he actually...
I can click on it. He's Swedish.
He's Swedish. Was he born in Sweden?
Born 25th November 1979, is a Swedish and American actor. Okay, so maybe he gets his lack of an accent to us from being Swedish and American. Hmm. Says he was born in Stockholm.
No. Regardless, he was very well cast for the first season. And I think I mentioned this to you, that I feel like they kind of nailed the character type. Maybe someone who's read the book would feel differently, and I didn't even know it was a book until the other day. That he has the mass appeal of a character like Aiden Pierce from Watch Dogs, or the character you play in Half-Life, the silent protagonist who is easy to sympathize with, or
he's
this... imprint yourself on, right, to take the place of, because he doesn't say much, but he's just kind of stoic but has a bit of a humor. Kind of an untouchable character.
Right. He's very... he's kind of hyper-masculine in that he's just really strong and large and quiet and...
He's got a personality. We're making him sound kind of boring. He's got a sense of humor. He's just not very... hyper emotional, and that's kind of what I appreciate about his character. Like, he doesn't do the angry man thing.
Yeah.
And that's what, to get into the second season again, that's what bothered me about Anthony Mackie. It's like he didn't even watch the first season.
Yeah, I know, right?
So he didn't even try to match the character.
Yeah, in the first season, he just seems like an elite soldier. He's played well because he's an elite soldier. Yeah. They're trained to not have emotion about what they're doing. They're just... they follow orders, they do their thing.
Yeah, he makes comments to intentionally make people uncomfortable.
Right, and granted...
for his own amusement.
And also, he's complex in a way because he does have emotion, otherwise he wouldn't have rebelled, right? And fallen in love with Kelchrist and all these things. Like, he's complex, but he also...
has a moral code.
Yeah, he's got a moral code, but he's also, like, stoic, and he's a soldier. So, it's a good contrast.
He's believable... as kind of an ageless badass.
Yeah.
Somebody who just has been on ice for hundreds of years, woke up, and he's still a badass, even in a world he doesn't recognize.
And of note for his character is, we just watched the first episode last night, so it's fresh, he decides in the first episode to go back on ice.
Like, it's not his world.
Basically put himself back in storage, because... mm-hmm. It's unfamiliar to him, and he just doesn't want to live with the pain of losing his woman, which to him was recently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he, like, lives it up that night, takes a lot of drugs, and he decides he's not going to do what he got woken up to do. He's just going to go back, which is a pretty hardcore decision, but, you know, you got to kind of respect him for it.
So maybe we should get into why it was he was woken up and what he didn't want to do.
Right. So, Lawrence Bancroft is this ultra, ultra rich dude who gets woken up in a new sleeve to discover that he had been killed and he can't remember it. Normally, when this happens, he would remember the entire event, but it happened right when he was being backed up. Is that how that goes?
Yeah, the ultra rich... they don't just have a single stack. They have kind of a cloud storage system.
Right, storage.
Literally cloud storage.
Yeah, it's in a satellite.
Yeah, they get backed up every so many hours or something like that.
It's like once a day or something like that, yeah.
Yeah. And so this guy, everyone tells him that the evidence points to either him or his wife murdering him, and he refuses to believe either one. So he... is kind of pushed, we don't know this at the beginning of the story, but he's pushed into thawing out Kovacs in particular.
Right.
To investigate.
Because Kovacs has, like, kind of a legendary reputation.
Well, he's the last surviving envoy.
Yeah, and the envoys were an elite force, capable of doing all kinds of things. They could infiltrate computer systems, they can... assume identities and pass in pretty much any society successfully, just hide within the masses, their elite fighting forces, on and on and on. So he's like a perfect candidate to do an investigative work in this way.
Yeah. And we should probably make a note about Bancroft. He's played by, what is that guy's name?
James Purfoy.
Yeah, another really well-cast role, I think, because he is a pretty charismatic guy in everything he's in.
Yeah, if anybody listening has seen The Following, then at least the first season.
Yeah,
we like first seasons a lot more on most things, don't we?
Yeah, second and third seasons were weird.
Then you may have an appreciation for him, because that show really displayed how good of an actor he is, in my opinion.
Yeah. But anyway, he comes off as a character throughout the whole thing. You're not sure if you're supposed to actually like him or hate him, kind of depending on where you're at. Watching the first episode again, I kind of thought, wow, this guy's a lot more sympathetic than I thought the first time through.
Well, I think later on, in a couple episodes later, they definitely paint him as a terrible degenerate.
Mm-hmm.
There's kind of this theme that runs through the first season of, oh, these ultra-rich guys who never fear death. He's 300-something years old. Mm-hmm. Bancroft is. They don't fear death, and they're so old that all the normal pleasures that everybody else experiences have gotten old to them. Therefore, they keep seeking these more extreme pleasures, and there's some really dark things that they do, and that's kind of the feeling you get about them.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't get that in the first episode. I think that comes later.
Yeah. So in the very first episode, Takashi is thawed out. He's in a prison. He's interviewed by the warden, who says, oh, look at your file. So you're an awful person, and you're being rented out by Bancroft to do this thing for him. But you know what? You're going to screw up, because you're just a piece of trash, and you're going to be back here on ice.
Yeah.
So go have fun for a day. Then he's picked up by stereotypical angry Hispanic woman.
Yeah.
Who pretends to be really nice off the bat, and then she drops him off at Bancroft's place and basically throws a temper tantrum.
Well, you find out in that first episode that Bancroft already went to the police and asked them for help, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And they failed. And yeah. So that's one of the couple of reasons that Bancroft is getting Takeshi out of ICE, is because this other investigator with the police force failed him horribly. And so she's throwing a tizzy fit because he's seeking outside help.
Well, also, we find out probably in the next episode or third episode.
Yeah, it happens soon.
That the sleeve, the body he's in, is belonging to her boyfriend,
right,
who was framed for something. I can't remember what he was framed for.
Which is kind of a jab at her, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think it was intentional.
And she makes mention in the first episode that Bancroft had intentionally kind of ruined her career and her life because he's vindictive and ultra rich and he doesn't care. He gets his jollies off on making people miserable in certain ways. So he had kind of blackballed her and smeared her name, and then he put this elite soldier's stack into her ex-boyfriend's body just to jab her even harder, you know?
Yeah, I don't recall if that is entirely Bancroft or his wife.
That's true.
Who does end up being kind of the villain of the whole thing, funnily enough.
Right, and I didn't really write in-depth notes about that, but yeah, his wife and Takeshi's sister were in league. That's how it ends, right? They were in league to frame...
sister... Boy, we're really skipping all over the place.
Yeah, we are.
The sister ends up being alive, and she's been manipulating things for centuries to try and get Takashi off of ICE. She's been building an empire, her own little... You know, she runs, basically, the sex trade,
seems like. Yeah, and the black market.
Yeah. And she frames things up perfectly to manipulate Bancroft into killing a girl, to push an investigation, as I recall.
Right, on purpose.
To get Takashi off ICE. And Bancroft, big spoiler alert, he actually did shoot himself. Not to kill himself, but to...
Forget what he did.
Right before his memory backup, he shoots himself in the stack so that when his when he comes back online, he won't remember.
Yeah, what he was basically horrified and full of remorse at his own capability of being so degenerate and evil.
And the reason is that his wife drugged him with like this super male aggression drug so that when he was having sex with the hooker, he actually strangled her.
Right. And it was real death because she didn't have a backup or whatever.
Because, well, so Raylene, the sister, she...
Oh, did she use the virus?
No. So in this world, basically, it's going to take a whole nother turn. Recall that some people do not like the stacks. Stacks are implanted at 1 year old.
Oh, right, right. Yeah, and there's a cast of people who, religious people, who don't take it.
Well, they do. Everybody takes
it. They have it, but they refuse to get re-sleeved once they're dead. Like, that's it. Yeah. Right? It's like, maybe it's like a certificate you sign or whatever. Like, I will
it's
not.
It's coding. Yeah. It's coding in the stack itself.
Oh, is it? Oh, I don't recall that detail.
So, it's explained in the, you know, the big, that we're going to give you all the exposition in the last episode.
It's a big info dump.
Raylene explains that the young women that come to work for her, they all get murdered, basically. They're all up there to pleasure the elites and kind of be their little purge slaves, as
right,
it were.
Right, right.
She reprograms them when they come to work for her to have, I think, religious programming so that they will not be spun back up. Or maybe it's impossible to.
I see.
So this girl at the beginning who they find floating in the water, she doesn't really become a big part. She's just kind of a name in the back of the story after a while.
Yeah.
Ortega, the annoying police officer, she is certain that Bancroft murdered this girl, but she can't prove it.
Right.
And he did when he was under the influence.
Yeah.
We come to find out that the wife was being blackmailed by Raylene because she murdered a woman who was a favorite hooker of Bancroft's because she was pregnant.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And remember, the wife, she's weird. She's got this whole, the children are mine.
Yeah.
They're hundreds of years old. The children are hundreds, over 100 years old.
Yeah.
But they still treat their children like, well, children.
Yeah,
they
it's bizarre.
They keep them very dumbed down and on a tight leash.
Yeah.
And that's a little side plot point as well with their son, who hasn't really been allowed to mature.
Yeah, he hasn't been allowed to become a man. And there's not really an inheritance coming for him because his father's going to live forever.
Yeah.
And he's going to live forever.
And I thought
it's bizarre.
I thought that was a nice thing at the end of this first season, was that Bancroft kind of has a redeeming moment in that he turns to his wife after like the big info dumps, like, what have we done to each other?
Yeah.
We've lived too long.
And doesn't he take her and like go willfully into custody for
the
murder?
Well, he turns himself in.
Yeah, he turns himself in, but he brings her with him.
Well, she's under arrest.
She's under arrest.
He's turning himself
in. Okay, so he goes willingly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was an interesting moment. I appreciated that.
And the wife's, I'll stand by you. Like, we'll get our lawyer, and then, actually, you're under arrest, too. Wait, what? But when he goes, he says, I'm turning everything over to you, to the son, as it should have been a long time ago.
Yeah, so he actually got his inheritance and is forced to become a man eventually.
And I was really surprised by that, because there's a lot of strong female power vibes. Not a ton. Definitely not as much as the second season.
The second one is rife with it.
Second season's pretty painful to watch after the first one. But I thought it was very surprising because I felt like a lot of the message of the season was white man, white rich man bad.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that Kovach is played by a white man.
Right.
He's originally, of course, an Asian man.
Yeah.
But, you know, this show lends itself well to ticking off all the diversity boxes.
It fits with the world, though. I mean, you can become anyone. You never really die. They just get you a fresh body or a crappy old body that they just have laying around that, you know what I mean?
And that's a thing, too, about the politics of the world. Remember in the very first episode, he's getting out of prison. He sees people, you know, meeting up with their families and stuff, and he watches this family just in tears that their 7-year-old daughter, who got killed in, like, an accident or something, is being put has been put in the body of, like, this 50-year-old...
meth addict or whatever? Yeah, this rough-looking old woman, and it's got a seven-year-old's stack, as it were, in her. Yeah, it's an interesting concept that lends itself to all kinds of weird moral quandaries and ideas. I appreciated the main storyline with, I think, Kovac's sister, which we didn't even describe her specifically. Her name is Raylene. I guess we described her enough, though. She becomes this black market dealer who's really, really powerful and super rich. She orchestrates everything.
And she's really been there throughout the whole thing.
Right.
You're not supposed to know it. Like, you see... Sorry.
Because she slips in and out of this other body, so you don't know it's her pretty often.
Mm-hmm.
But she uses her original body, which is different than Kovac's. He's stuck in this big, sweet-looking guy's body when he's this Asian guy. Originally, Kovac's Prime is what they call him, the first Kovac's.
Mm-hmm.
But his sister is the one who orchestrated it all in order to get him out because she knew his stack was still available.
Mm-hmm.
Because she wanted her brother back. It was like a familial love that she wanted to experience again, but she like turned dark over the years and she used all these really dirty deeds. She's a black market dealer.
Well,
you
come to find out that she actually betrayed the envoys way back when.
Right.
In order to save him.
Right, because she thinks that he's in the wrong, but she loves him at the same time.
She really hated Kel.
Right.
The woman who Kovac is obsessed with still.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. And it's interesting that she's the bad guy, but there's still this like unbreakable familial love that she has for him, even unto the end, even though even in the end she's still the bad guy. Like, she will not give up being the bad guy in order to be around him.
Yeah, well, in the end she says, just pull the trigger.
Yeah.
I'll never stop.
Right. And she basically forces him, that's the big spoiler at the end, she forces him to kill her.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have a choice. He knows that she'll never stop. And she has a ton of power, and she's basically evil.
Well, technically, they go down together. The satellite falls from the sky.
Right.
And his sleeve drowns, but then they spin him back up.
Right. And hers is done forever because of the virus.
Well, no, he shot her in the stack.
Right, but all her backups are dead, too, because of the virus. So she's gone forever at that point.
Yeah, he tried to back her into a corner by poisoning her backups.
Right, so she knows that she's going to be done if he kills her at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And she basically just forces his hand.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting dynamic, and I appreciated that.
Yeah, and you told me that when you looked up the synopsis for the book, apparently in the book she's not his sister. She's just...
Yeah, the differences... I actually really like the differences for the show a lot more than I liked what went on in the book. And one of the biggest ones was that that's not his sister. She's in the book, she's literally just a black market dealer.
Hmm.
That's it. She's just a bad guy. So there's no like, there's no familial dynamic there, which is a big deal, you know, to make it complex as far as building an interesting dynamic. There was one other big difference. The other big difference in the book is that Kelchrist is like this hero of old that everyone knows about. He never knew her.
Hmm.
She did start a rebellion, but that was like hundreds of years before Takeshi was born. And he's part of these envoys, but the envoys are a protectorate force, a military protectorate force. So he is an elite soldier, but he's not in a rebellion or anything. He's just a military guy at that point. So I guess in the books, Kel is mentioned, but just as this like, oh, remember 500 years ago? We must remember what happened with this rebellion that Kelchrist Falconer led. And let's not have that happen again. It's not like this person he knows or anything.
Hmm.
So there's two pretty big differences. But especially that one where Raylene is his sister. That I think that's a really masterful touch for the TV show,
well,
as far as the difference.
It probably ties things up a little more neatly.
Yeah.
You can expand on things longer in a book.
And also has a better emotional impact at the end.
Yeah.
I'm kind of talked out on the show now. I think I said all my points.
I don't know that we hit the entire thing. We took off from, let's give the synopsis, to let's jump all over the place.
I know, but I think we covered everything. And we talked about all the characters that matter to us. There's others, but we're not. Oh, we should mention Poe.
Mm.
We're not trying to do an exhaustive podcast on the show, just a quick show. But Poe is interesting. He's kind of a principal character. He's an AI that runs a hotel, and in the first episode, multiple times you hear, oh, nobody goes to AI hotels anymore. And even Poe himself is like, you're the first guest I've had in 5 decades. So
he's so excited about it.
Yeah, he's excited about having a guest for his hotel. So he takes on the persona, this AI takes on the persona of Edgar Allan Poe, and he runs a hotel called the Raven.
Yes.
For whatever reason, Takeshi is not has no problem with them, even though they've gone out of style and nobody in the city.
Well, it's because 250 years ago.
That's true. Maybe they didn't even have them, or they have. Yeah, because he seems familiar with the idea. But he kind of becomes his like sidekick almost. He serves various functions, and
he's kind of the mentor character.
Yeah, he's the mentor, and he, since he's an AI, he's capable of like manipulating computer systems and doing certain research things, and on and on. We won't go into the subplots. I think we can probably skip over the subplot with him.
Yeah, he's a interesting, likable character in the first season. And the second season just ruined
him. Yeah, it really did. I didn't like him at all in the second season. And we may do a whole episode for the second season soon. Maybe that'll be our episode 2. We'll do season 2 and we'll just hate on it the whole time because we didn't like it much.
So, I should say, and this will probably be a repeating theme throughout this entire podcast, not just this one, but all podcasts. I do not like it when someone writes a story and can't commit to the death of a character or something emotional. They build Poe up to be this, you know, good person, in air quotes, an AI, who is kind of friends with Kovach, and he helps everyone out, and he has an emotional impact on the kind of the little team that forms.
Mm-hmm.
And they kill him in the last episode. Mm-hmm. He dies. And then they bring him back in the next season as this broken kind of shell of a creature.
Yeah.
This emotional, whimpering thing that you just are so frustrated with, that Kovach is constantly yelling at, which is also my problem with Kovach in the second season.
He's too emotional.
It's not good, and it's something that's been happening a lot in media, not just this.
It's going to come up a lot in our podcast. It seems like so many shows, and even video games and books,
they can't commit to the death.
Yeah, when you kill a character, you leave that character dead, and I'll have more respect for you if you figure out a way around having that character remain dead. You know, takes more guts.
Yeah, if you can reference the character in a way that reminds the audience that you cared about them, that's better than bringing them back as a pathetic creature.
Of note, concerning Poe, another difference in the book was that in the book it was Jimi Hendrix. And they actually asked the estate or the holders for Jimi Hendrix if they could use his likeness and the Jimi Hendrix Hotel or whatever for the show, and they declined because the show has too much violence. And Jimi Hendrix has written into their policies that they won't associate their name with anything that's too violent. That's fine. Good for them.
So, as far as the premise of the show, I think it's a very interesting idea, and I mentioned this to you the other day, of thought, not that we can really come up with an answer to it, but I think it's an interesting idea, and something that I think is being probably talked about in some circles now. If you download a human consciousness and move it from one body to another, is that the same person, or are you creating a new person each time, and does the soul go with that?
Well, that was touched upon in the show very briefly. They didn't get too deep into the philosophical implications of such a system.
Well, and I think there's kind of an unanswered question hanging over the show in the first season, definitely not in the second, because the second season has no deep questions.
It's pretty light it's pretty light on introspection.
Does human life have any value at all after a certain point, because you're just throwing away a dead sleeve?
Well, it...
You know?
Well, it does if you don't have the money to get another sleeve and you just go on ice indefinitely.
But then they'll just put you in the body of a drug addict who's in prison.
But they won't, because you can't afford it. You're like, remember
no.
In the show, it says that you can't get... If your body dies and your family can't afford to get you back, then you're just gone.
No, you recall that little girl who was put in the druggie's body. They said the state is required to give you a sleeve.
Oh, right.
And I think it was because she like died in some sort of a police investigation or something. She died in a certain manner, so the government was required to provide a sleeve. They didn't say it had to be a good sleeve.
Yeah, that's true.
So they can pay for a better one, or they can get the free one that the government rents out. So they rent out the bodies of prisoners.
Right.
So I don't know. I think it's an interesting unanswered question that they left hanging in the first season, is basically human life is meaningless. Because they also end up, you find out that they have synthetic bodies.
Right. And clones. Enhanced bodies. Things of that nature.
Yeah, and the second season really got into some stupidness with like enhanced bodies and like cross genetics with animals and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, in the first season he has like, what if they mentioned something like faster reacting muscles, and he's got like a military enhanced body.
In the second season?
No, in the first season too. We just watched that first episode. They mention it.
I don't think they did.
Yeah, they mentioned it. He has like augments to his body that make him stronger and better somehow.
I think
they're just not egregiously used like in the second one. Absolutely.
That's her boyfriend's body.
Yeah. He must have paid for the augments or whatever.
Hmm.
Yeah. Anyway.
Oh.
They mention it.
Okay, Bancroft must have paid for that.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, it is a thing in the first season. It's just not...
Magnetic gun hands?
Yeah, it's just not superhero stuff, you know?
The second season really just seemed to take a left turn into, let's make this ridiculous.
Yeah, the first one's like a grim, dirty, dystopia, you know...
Thought-provoking?
Cyberpunk. Yeah, it's like a thought-provoking cyberpunk that's like gritty and realistic. And the second one's like... Ooh, we mixed you with canine blood and canine genetics, and
we
gave you these magnetic hands that suck up guns through the air. Come on now.
They also made him a black guy with no anger management.
Yeah. You suddenly have more emotion than you've ever had in the past 300 years. we'll talk about the second season later.
I'm just trying to think if there was anything else. I should have been writing down notes, because I know there was...
I have miles of notes.
Yeah.
But I think we've covered the first season pretty well. It's a very scattered way of relating the story, but I think whoever listens to this will get a good gist. It's a detective story, so it's kind of hard to relate a detective story in the same way you receive a detective story with the revelations and the interesting ins and outs. There's a lot we didn't cover. There's subplots we didn't talk about, on and on, but. Those are the heavy-duty cliff notes.
Well, I think suffice it to say the casting in the first season was pretty well done. I don't like the character of Ortega, but she was probably fairly well cast.
I think she does what she intends to do.
Yeah. There were some other side characters who were just kind of annoying, and they seemed like shoehorned in minority picks a little bit. Or, you know, we've got to have... Got to have a little bit of this character and a little bit of this character.
Yeah.
Just for the sake of it. But for the most part, I thought it was a cohesive story. The last episode seemed a little let's rush and slap this together really quick.
Yeah, they kind of... It feels like they attempted to be a little bit episodic here and there, which was to their detriment because then build up to the last episode wasn't gradual enough. You know what I mean? It like came and then suddenly it was like, hey, whoa, here's the last episode. We got to tie up all loose ends. Instead of like gradually doing it here and there. Nope. They had these side plots and it stuck a bit much in there.
I will say that could just be because we stopped on like episode 7.
And then we waited a year.
Yeah. And then came back to finish it.
That's a good point.
I would like to watch the whole first season again.
Yeah. I liked it. I did. I liked it a lot. So we have decided to have two correlating rating systems. So the first one is easy to say. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
I wouldn't give it an excellent category. So our first rating is bad, not bad, okay, good, and excellent. So I think it was good. It was better than okay, but it wasn't fantastic. So it fits nicely in the good category. It's a 5-star rating.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
It gets 4 stars, which is good.
It has right? the gold rating.
It has the gold rating. So, yes, the next rating is based on metal. So we have copper, bronze, silver, gold, and orichalcum. It's not orichalcum or orichalcum, depending on how you want to pronounce it.
Hmm. Yeah, no, I thought it was good. I thought the writing was fairly cohesive. I didn't like some of the characters. But that could just be personal taste.
Yeah. I thought most of the main characters were excellent. It's the side characters I had a little problem with. And our baby's maybe waking up?
I think she's fine.
Alright, well, we're wrapping up anyway. All the main characters I really liked. Bancroft, excellent portrayal. The guy who plays Takeshi, really good. Even Ortega's fine. She's a little annoying because she's the angry Hispanic detective, which seems a little tropey.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot of TV shows have an angry Hispanic detective.
Oh, let me grab the baby.
The baby's waking up. I'm going to pause real quick. We'll just have a little gap in the recording here. So, yeah. We're back after that short pause. Yeah, I thought it was good. The guy who played Poe, he did a great job in the first season. And it's not his fault he didn't do good. I didn't like him in the second season. It's the director's fault, you know.
It's the writing.
It's the writing. They tell the actors to do what they do, and that's how they do. So, that first season was great.
I think the writing and the casting is probably better because it was the first season.
Yeah,
they're throwing all their money at it, so yeah. they got the good actors.
According to Wikipedia, Netflix spent more on that particular season of that show than any other show they'd ever produced. It cost an extraordinary amount of money.
More than The Witcher? Because that came out after.
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I feel like yes, though. I feel like the answer is yes to that question. So mine, a rating is good with a gold star. How about you?
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that.
All right. I think we're going to wrap it up there. I don't have anything else to say.
No. Anything else, I will put in the one for the next season. There'll be a lot of complaining in the next one.
Yeah, when we do the next season, I'll give you a preview. It won't get a gold star. All right. Thanks, everyone. That's it.
Okay.
Good night. Good night.